Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. We're having our usual walk through the Welsh Hills today in the winter sunshine, and we're going to do the next episode in our Lao Tzu series. So today we're on chapter 45, so let's have a little read through it and see what we thought he was thinking about on the day he wrote this one.
A great thing done is never perfect, but that doesn't mean it fails. It does what it is. Real richness means to act as if you had nothing, because then you will never be drained of it. The greatest straightness seems bent. The greatest ability seems awkward. The greatest speech like a stammering. Act calmly, not coldly. Peace is greater than anger. Tranquility and harmony are the true order of things.
So what do you think was on Lao Tzu's mind on the day he wrote this one then?
This is Lao Tzu in teacher mode. He's trying to point out to us in a gentle way the Tao itself, its majesty, its immensity, but also its low-key nature and how that softness and peacefulness becomes a part of our being and part of our actions and behaviour when we align ourselves with the Tao. So this is the lesson, and it consists of a few gentle pointers and some riddles and some mischievous perplexities for us.
I do get the impression he was feeling a bit mischievous on the day he wrote this.
Yeah, there's always a little bit of mischief.
A little bit humorous, perhaps.
And a little bit of sly humour.
Yeah.
But he also always means business. He's not messing about, he's the real deal. He does mean business when he engages with you. This one, I intend to go through it a couplet at a time. So there's four kind of chunks of it. I'm just going to go through. So he starts with, a great thing done is never perfect, but that doesn't mean it fails, it does what it is. But there's a sort of warning there in that first line against the tension and the noise of perfectionism. And this reminds me of the great Persian miniatures, exquisite paintings, aesthetically almost perfect, but the painter of such a picture would always deliberately make one little mistake, because only God is perfect. Yeah. And the same with the carpet weavers, they'd always put one stitch in that was the wrong colour somewhere, one little bit of weaving that was the wrong colour. For the same reason, that it would be an affront to Allah. Because as you know, Muslims are very keen on emphasising the perfection of Allah over and against the messed up nature of human beings. Okay, I mean, that's their trip, but it does remind me of that a little bit. And he's saying, don't worry about it. And in fact, there is a kind of a roughness about a certain very great aesthetic accomplishment, and this was taken up by Japanese aesthetics, you know, the wabi, I think it's called, in which there's an appreciation of ordinary everyday objects. Maybe they've been broken and then glued back together again, and you could admire the gluing and the crazing, you know, an appreciation of humble objects that have a very great beauty, but don't boast a kind of what we might take to be an aesthetic perfection. There's a roughness over and against the kind of over-refined aesthetic production or an over-refined sensibility. And he's warning us not to get hung up on that. And certainly, if you are a real perfectionist, it's a kind of suffering, especially in an artist or, I don't know, maybe even a philosopher. It can drive you crazy. But of course, there is I mean, he goes on and says, well, that doesn't mean that it fails. So it means that any kind of endeavour on Lao Tzu's take here is meant to be useful. It's about its use. We're more concerned with the functionality of an action or a production or an aesthetic production or even the thought or whatever. It has to work, it has to be useful to us rather than in its own right, you might say. That's what he means when he says, that doesn't mean that it fails. You try something, it's not perfect, but that don't mean to say it fails. It'll still probably work. I mean, the way he puts it, he says, it does what it is. This means that the use or the functionality of a thought or an action or an aesthetic production, an artistic production, or an invention or a practical endeavour derives its use and its functionality from its being, from its actual its being. That's what he means by it does what it is. Now there is another question arises here that taps us deeper into a hermeneutics of suspicion, and that is the question of, well, what is perfection anyway, and who's to say so? What is the standard of perfection? Where does it come from? Because basically, the notion of perfection is just something that somebody says. It's a conception held by somebody. There isn't a cosmic gold standard in some vault in the back lot of heaven somewhere, which we can measure the perfection or imperfection of anything against. It's a popular opinion or maybe an authoritative opinion held by a community, usually. And very often the notions of perfection are enforced rather than somehow voluntary or somehow just there. I mean, and that actually undermines the whole game of perfectionism. Once you actually start asking, well, perfect according to who? Who are they to say so? Is that really it? You know? And that's the take I would be offering out to anybody who was suffering from perfectionism or who was trying to peddle a discourse of perfectionism. And Lao Tzu is also trying to subverse the project of perfectionism. Maybe there's something that maybe teachers of meditation try and offer. They say we meditate to become perfect, we pray to become perfect. We do religious devotions to become perfect. We do self-cultivation to become perfect. We do psychoanalysis to become perfect. Lao Tzu says no. And I also say no, but I say no because we don't know what perfection is. I can only see that notion of perfection as being something that circulates in communities, often with some kind of authority or maybe even some violence behind it, that is ultimately arbitrary. No, but if there is such a thing as a real cosmic guaranteed, God guaranteed, cosmos guaranteed, Tao guaranteed perfection, we don't know what it is anyway. So drop it. But Lao Tzu and both myself and Lao Tzu are just saying, well, just drop perfectionism. And if somebody starts telling you that you'll be perfect when you do their yoga exercises or their meditations or their mantras, tell them to fuck off and die, basically. Yeah. Or just say, well, you say perfect, but according to who? By what standard? And then just sit back, get the popcorn, and enjoy the spectacle of them digging a big hole for themselves, because people come out with that shit, they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, the next stanza. Real richness means to act as if you had nothing, because then you will never be drained of it. This is the theme that he threw about briefly in the last Lao Tzu that we considered, chapter 44. Act as if you had nothing, because then you will be never drained of it. And this again is that truism that you can encounter by applying simple Taoism in your life as it unfolds, that nothing is inexhaustible, that the void is creative, that not filling up all your psychic space with the quests for wealth and fame and status, if one is simply content to be, well, pretty insignificant, nothing almost. But in that contentness is an acquaintance with the Dow, which in turn is an acquaintance with a bottomless wellspring of creativity. And this is what he means here. And the next stanza. The greatest straightness seems bent, the greatest ability seems awkward, and the greatest speech like a stammering. Well, this is Lao Tzu giving us a self-portrait, or the picture of the sage, the Devi sage. Somebody you can't quite get a grip on, you might think they're an idiot. And the greatest, they're absolutely straight, and straight here means like just really kind of ruthlessly honest and without adornment in their presentation. But for all that, they're saying bent. Maybe in contrast with everybody else who's trying to impress, who's all into status and wealth, and the status that comes of having wealth and all the rest of it, all the stuff he spoke about in the previous stanza. But somebody who's actually dead straight, as in like straight, you know, as in honest, in a world like ours, seems like completely bent. This is why everybody hated Jeremy Corbyn. Because he's more honest than the rest of them. I dare say he's got his foibles and all the rest of it, but he's actually just more honest than the rest of them. And they hate him for it because it shows them up. Yeah. The greatest straightness seems bent. The greatest ability seems awkward. Again, you know, there's hyperbole here. This is Lao Tzu's method of contradictory and everything that seems like common sense. This is his method, but there's truth in it. The greatest ability seems awkward. Again, which without flash and show, you know. And he's very suspicious of very flashy people and very showy people. And he's warning us at the same time, you know, just be careful about what you're impressed by.
Yeah.
And the greatest speech is like a stammering. Again, be very, very careful of great fluency, of great rhetoric, of great soaring rhetoric. Because often it's empty. In fact, often it's worse than empty. It's downright untrue. But it can nevertheless be seductive because of its music, its cadence, its emotion, the tricks of rhetoric, of which there are many. And be careful of that. At the same time, don't be too hasty to judge when somebody appears to stammer. Listen. Because sometimes sagacity is behind this kind of low-key expression. I'm going to move on to the next one. Act calmly, not coldly. Peace is greater than anger. Tranquility and harmony are the true order of things. I really like this, act calmly, not coldly. Because sometimes people think calm is coldness, and it's not necessarily the case. And he's Lao Tzu is advising us against being cold. This approach to meditation, to contemplative life, to life itself in general, is not one which recommends an icy detachment, as we find so often in spirituality. Spirituality, on many takes, is a matter of becoming completely detached from everything, to the point that you become like a block of ice. But Lao Tzu's all for human warmth. And I have to say, I'm with him on that. See why I like the guy so much. Because I agree with him. Mm-hmm. Of course, we like people who we agree with, which is a bit of a funny thing in its own right. But yes, human warmth. He's shilling for human warmth, it is. He's recommending that we don't attempt to stifle human warmth. But be calm, not cold. And be tranquil, not angry. Well, anger is sometimes useful, I think. When we've done a podcast years ago about how anger can be useful. There is a justifiable kind of anger. And you even find it in Lao Tzu sometimes, when you feel like he's telling you off. Or he's telling people off. That's about as angry as he gets, you know. But by and large, especially a kind of systemic anger that's, you know, if anger is your moment-to-moment background default state, when your background emotional colour this is not a great way to live. This is suffering. And you can drop it. And Laut is certainly saying, well, just you know, drop it. It's unproductive. Much better to be tranquil. Doesn't mean to say you might not have to sort of undertake big projects, that you might not have to intervene in various things and be active. It's not to say that. It's just if you're tranquil, you're thinking, and your analysis of the problems you're facing is clearer. Your actions that you then take is more to the point, more efficient, less likely to screw up. Again, this is a very practical teaching, you know, tranquility over anger, if you can manage it. But do bear in mind that there's a difference between justifiable anger and anger which is just a default state for somebody. And Lao Tzu can never stop being cosmic, so he finishes off, tranquility and harmony are the true order of things. Well, maybe at some ultimate level. But I think I can go with Heraclitus here and say that nature is war and peace. It's strife and contentment. That there are agonistic elements in the universe, even though ultimately, at the very deepest level, it is tranquil and harmonious. There's a deeper harmony, you might say. And there's a deep harmony even in the strife. There's a deep harmony even in the survival of the fittest and Darwinian struggle. There's a deep harmony even in particles and antiparticles annihilating each other. And there's a deep harmony in the storm that's coming in off the sea next week and all the rest of it. But as a recommendation for human beings, tranquility, calmness over coldness, and peace over anger. Let these be your values, and just through experience learn to value peace, because it's very, very tasty, and learn to value calm, and learn to value human warmness just by tasting them. Just have a taste, and there it is. It's cool, and it feels pretty cosmic actually. It feels as though, well, the universe is telling me to do this. Call it madness if you want to. Call it crookedness if you want to.
So I hope everyone found that interesting. I'm going to finish our walk now, but we will be speaking to you again soon.
Make knowledge great again. Look after yourselves.